When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 193 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, UK's biggest sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. Isn't it great when Everton win a game of football, and even more so when we win away from home? And that's exactly what we've done today. Obviously gone to West Ham United and picked up a fantastic 1-0 win. And we all said that on last week's podcast, we all fancied it. We all thought we'd go there and win the games, and we were like, I think you're 1-0, Peter. Pretty sure it was 1-0, wasn't it? You had nail on the head.
Absolutely happy to be right.
And I think me and Lee had 2-1, so we knew it was going to be a tight game. But with West Ham playing in Europe on Thursday, having to travel to Greece, obviously they lost that game as well. Fatigue is always a factor, especially when you're travelling. And Everton have taken full advantage and got a priceless win away from home. And it's great to see that, you know, it keeps us moving up the table a little bit on goal difference, yes, but it puts a big gap, and it sounds terrible, but it puts a big gap between us and the bottom three, which is the first obviously target this season is to stay away from there. But joining me and Peter is obviously friend of the show, the fourth wheel of the podcast is Phil Haywood. But Phil, you know, we've got to start on the sad events that have hit the club this week with the death of Chairman Bill Kenwright. We saw at today's game against West Ham that there was tribute there. There was obviously a minute's applause, and West Ham put a wreath on the seat that Bill Kenwright would have occupied if he had been there. So it's been a difficult week, hasn't it, for the club with the death of the chairman. We know what's gone on in recent times. Of course, we know it's the back end of his time. The chairman has been a very negative one, unfortunately. But obviously, a terrible loss for his family, friends, and the club, the players, and the manager as well.
Yeah, massively. I think been very classy across the football world, really. Like you said, Mike, you know, we've had a lot of negativity the last couple of years, and obviously, you know, that the fans have been up in arms about where the direction of the club and where it's going. But you know, you can't forget some of the, you know, the times we had under, like, David Moyes, with the partnership of Bill Kenwright and Moyes were, and obviously we got some European nights, and we got some, you know, top six, top four finishes, and he seemed to have a lot of fans from basically around the football world, which were mourning his death.
And rightly so, Pete, wasn't it? You know, in terms of the reaction, like Phil has mentioned, there's a lot of respect for Bill Kenwright within the world of football, especially within, I think, the Premier League. A lot of the, you know, the people who've worked at other clubs for many years have got a working relationship with him. And we've seen the reaction from current players, ex-players of Everton Football Club. He certainly meant a lot to those people, didn't he? And the tributes this week, we've seen obviously from Seamus Coleman, the manager, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, spoke before the game and after the game. They've all been keen to express their gratitude to how he's been with them as people, as humans. And it's, I think that, you know, today, a lot of the interviews post-match have dedicated that win to Bill Kenwright, which shows that the high esteem he was held in within the bars of a football club.
Definitely. I think, like Phil said, that, you know, the words are class and respect, I think, particularly from the world of sport. And it's big dividends, doesn't it, that I think a lot of people have come out and prompted to, you know, to kind of share their condolences and their experiences of Bill Kenwright as a person. I know we all spoke privately about kind of Marco Silva's comments, and how well he spoke about his time at the club and his relationship with Bill Kenwright. And I think really, Mike, you know, we were talking a few days ago, and you put it perfectly, really, that the last few years have probably affected the way that maybe some fans have responded to Bill Kenwright and, you know, to the news that he's died. But I think we all need to see his time in context, don't we? And I think we all need to remember him as the man who loved Everton, and to see that as such a big feature of who he was. And I think it's important he's remembered in that way.
Correct. And obviously, Evertonians will have the chance to show their respect on Wednesday night when we face Burnley in the Carabao Cup at Goodison Park, the first time we will have played at home since the death of Bill Kenwright. So it goes out saying, obviously, our thoughts and prayers are with his family and friends. I'm sure come Wednesday night at Goodison Park, there'll be a very respectful atmosphere and an atmosphere of reflection. But it was almost fitting today, Phil, and obviously we played against the David Moyes side, and we played in a manner that was almost befitting of a David Moyes Everton performance. You know, Sean Dyche, as we've seen in recent times, our away form has really picked up. I think that's 15 points he's picked up away from home since he's come into the club, which, when we look back at previous managers in recent years and how poor our away form has been under them, you know, he really seems to have found a recipe, doesn't he, Sean Dyche, for us to be effective, for us to be efficient, and go away from home and be a real problem for many sides. And today is another example of that.
100%. Mike, I listened to the interviews after the game, and that's the first time West Ham haven't scored at home in the calendar year, 2023, which is massive. All West Ham's problems with size and skill, and they've got, so I know they've been on a bit of a poor form of conceding goals of late, but, you know, I didn't realise that. That's the first time they haven't scored in the calendar year at the London Stadium. It was very much a dogged performance, as in, like, all stuck together, or were quite narrow, kept the gaps between defence and midfield, and midfield to forward quite narrow, where West Ham couldn't really play around. So it had to be either a great ball in, or if they did get past Mikalenko, you had Branthwaite there. If they got past out wide on the other side, you had Tarkowski there, or you had Onana. I thought it was terrific. And like you said, the way we countered with Dyche being at the club, the away games, we soak it in. And then what I found really impressive is we do break with numbers, albeit I think it's very slow, if I'm going to be super negative, and we do pick sometimes the wrong option, the final ball. But, you know, the desire to get forward and the desire to put numbers forward is very impressive, actually.
It is, and we've seen it work really well in terms of us countering with a bit more pace. Obviously, we always go back to Brighton, Brentford this season, away from home, we did it in a few times. But like you say, I think sometimes when we do look to counter, which is what we're looking to do, obviously we will soak things up, especially away from home. I think now that the way that we set up is it's mirrored wherever we tend to go, and we'll go there and think, well, if we can get a point, we'll get a point. That's the least that we want to try and pick up. But we trust ourselves to counter. But like you say, at times it's a little bit pedestrian, a little bit slow, but we do tend to break with bodies. And we've just got to be a little bit braver at times and a little bit quicker when we do break, because, you know, we can then, you know, we went ahead today, we can then go two or three ahead at times when sides are a little bit more open and they're chasing the game. But if we rewind back a little bit, you know, looking at the first sort of 15, 20 minutes, we were speaking, Pete, weren't we, about how we were sort of, we were getting penned in a little bit, and we weren't effective when we had the ball. We weren't doing a great deal with it in terms of possession-wise, and there was nothing really happening up top. But then Everton then weathered that sort of first 15, 20 minutes and then came into the game as the first half went on.
Definitely, yeah. I thought we... It might be a bit unfair to say we started poorly, but I felt like West Ham really set the pace of the game, and I think we struggled with that a little bit. I thought West Ham were really smart, really. I said in our group that they seemed to have a kind of a key attacking philosophy of just, obviously we were dropping deep, and they seemed to put two players at least on kind of our our back line on our last man. And then you had the likes of Paqueta and Bowen who would come in with the late run. And there were a few times I thought, you know, the goal's coming here because they were kind of, you know, getting close to the byline or the 6 yard and just looking to play the square cross to the late runner behind the line. There was that space. But I thought we defended really, really well. And I think weirdly, probably the thing I felt that helped us was that weird kind of altercation between like Kudus and Tarkowski and Pickford, because that really slowed the pace of the game down. There were a couple of moments like that that I think probably served in our favour in the first half that changed the pace of the game and kind of stopped the momentum of West Ham. And I think once we got into the second half, you could see we just had, we had a bit more confidence about us, I think. And the game looked very different. And I think, like Phil said, we were really, really impressive at times going forward, if not a bit wasteful. Obviously, there was the Harrison chance in the first half where he had his pick really of slipping in either Calvert-Lewin or Decore and you know, maybe did it a little bit. I know they said in the commentary on Sky, the centre-half, I don't know how to say his name, is it Agared or however you say it, he got his positioning spot on and made it difficult for Harrison. Then there's obviously the Decore chance where he's connected with it really well. It's a brilliant save. There were a couple of moments like that where arguably we could have done a little bit better, but I think getting through that first period was really, really key for us.
And on the Harrison chance as well, obviously, we restricted West Ham, I thought, really well in the first half. They didn't, as much as they had quite a bit of the ball, and you mentioned there, PT, early on, they were getting in behind, weren't they, and putting balls across the box. And I thought we defended particularly well. Our centre-half, Onana, it was a terrific all game, by the way. Listen, I wax lyrical about Amadou Onana all the time. And I did it again on Twitter post-match. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. I thought he absolutely controlled the midfield against a difficult, you know, a difficult side. You've got a decent home record, of course, like you were saying earlier on, Phil. The first game at home we haven't scored in this calendar year. But I thought that's the kind of game we've seen it quite a few times this season. We've seen the consistency for Onana. But that's the kind of game where you want him to control them to midfield, and that's exactly what he did. So we were defending those situations quite well. But then when we got that chance and we broke, and you just thought, I was fine with Harrison going on his own. Calvert-Lewin's made the run. The Corey's almost, so they make a similar run because they got in the way, really. It wasn't a great run. But I was fine with Harrison going alone. And even on his left foot, as your thoughts, you know, we've seen what he can do, what he can do with that. He didn't catch it at all well, did he, Phil? And at that point, you think, you know, in a game where we are going to be, you know, not probably creating loads and loads of chances and we're looking to counter, that was a chance I thought, you know, we've got to take those, otherwise it might come back to haunt us.
Massively, mate, especially any away game in this league, you know, you can be punished straight away. And I think of the opportunities we have created away from home, and certainly today, you've got to put one or two away or at least test the keeper just to take the pressure off the back line, because you know for a fact, I always say you've got to score when you're on top. And there was times where, all right, like you said, the first 20 minutes we soaked it up a little bit, but when you get opportunities, you have to take them because you don't get many set plays away from home or breakaways. And it just takes that little bit of pressure off the back line because, you know, like we were talking about before, West Ham, they're a decent side in all fairness. I think they'll be up in the top 10 again, in all fairness. I think he's got them organised and they've got goals from all over the place. It just, like you said, Meg, I've got no issue with Harrison going alone. I just think if you are, because there are other options, you've got to do better in those areas. But no, you'd be worried if you weren't getting them. Do you know what I mean? And the lad, if he scores that top bin, you know, you're all over him. So you can't really complain if he misses as well, kind of thing.
No, of course. And, you know, the fact that we broke again, you mentioned earlier on, we do break in numbers. We will go with you know, more than just one person who then finds themselves isolated. But that's why it's so important. When we're getting in those areas, let's take our chances. But it came, you know, it came, and when it came, Pete, what a goal it was. Listen, from Branthwaite's tackle where he pole axes the West Ham player. I know they went back to look at that, by the way, but it's a great tackle. It's just a great tackle. He, you know, the concerns around Branthwaite before he was given his chance, understandable concerns, by the way, the fact that he's gone away to a much slower league in terms of Holland, but he went away and he consistently played. He also won a trophy, and they wanted to sign him. So you know what you're going to get. You know, I've said it time and again, it brings balance to our two centre halves, a right footer and a left footer. It's a great tackle. You know, we did it all game, and we, you know, the one he got pulled for on Antonio in the second half was ridiculous, by the way. It's just a fantastic tackle. And we've seen him do it time and again, but he wins it. And then from there, you know, it's Calvert-Lewin, it's Calvert-Lewin Harrison, back to Calvert-Lewin. And Pete, that's prime Dominic Calvert-Lewin. That little touch, that little shift away, which was lovely, wasn't it? Created that little half a yard, gets his shot away quickly. He said himself after the game, he knew today he wasn't going to get loads and loads of chances. He was going to be a little bit frustrated and isolated, maybe. But that's what we've come to expect from Calvert-Lewin when he's fully fit. Having obviously now so many games consecutively, and he's playing week in, week out. What a finish! And like I say, that's what we want to see Dominic Calvert-Lewin doing week in, week out, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a brilliant goal. I was absolutely chuffed for him. I didn't think we were going to score from that position, to be honest. Like you say, Brantley was absolutely immense, and his positioning and his timing is just spot on, and he's so consistent with it as well. I think for such a young player. So, you know, hopefully his trajectory continues. But yeah, really commanding. Wins the ball just inside the West Ham half. Comes through to Harrison. Lovely little exchange between him and Calvert-Lewin. And it's like a little Cruyff, isn't it? Or almost a half Cruyff. Just a wrong foot the defender. And then I don't think he even needed to take a look, did he? He knew where the goal was. He knew what shot to play. And it's an absolutely brilliant finish. And I'm really, really pleased for him because he looks fit and sharp, doesn't he? And I think he was on for, was it about 80 minutes, 85 minutes? So, you know, he's essentially played the full game, but he looks like the Dominic Calvert-Lewin of old. And I'm thrilled for him, you know, on a personal level for him as a player, but it's brilliant news for Everton. Because I think the last two seasons have shown just how reliant we are on him. And I think there's probably a point in time where most Evertonians thought that we might not be able to see him again, or certainly not, you know, anywhere near this kind of level of form and fitness. So it's absolutely brilliant, and it's definitely something to be celebrated.
Do you know, his goal was that good, and like you said, prime Calvert-Lewin, boys. Like, I think for the Decore chance where he flicks that down, that was just as good as his goal for me. You know, where he's gone up halfway line, flicked it on. Decore ran through, and it was a great save. He took it early, but like you said, that is prime Calvert-Lewin. Like, he can play off his left, he can play in the air, he can bring it on his chest. I thought he's frightening, and he just, when you're at the game or you're watching it, you don't feel like, oof, he's going to pull up here. He just looks fit, doesn't he?
I think that's really key, isn't it? Because, you know, when he was coming back to fitness over the last 18 months, 2 years or so, and, you know, we'd be getting back, and we almost in the back of our minds knew he's being rushed back here, hasn't he? Because we need him. And you're always thinking, you know, when he does slide in, or when he does jump, when he lands, what's going to happen? And I saw a couple of times today where he was sliding and trying to nip the ball, wasn't he? He was about two or three times. And previously, I'd think, oh, don't do that. Just let it go. But this seems, I don't want to tempt fate. Listen, I just don't want to tempt fate. But the fact that he's been able to string a fair few games together now and look stronger by the week. You know, he's come back, he scored four goals as now, which is, you know, a terrific return. It's the Dominic Calvert-Lewin that we all know and love, isn't it? That we saw under Ancelotti. You know, obviously different manager. It was a bit different then, obviously, with Richarlison quite often in and around Calvert-Lewin. But he leads the line really well. You know, when you see there that little flick out of it for Decore, the way that he needs that, it's a lovely little touch on. So we did it a couple of times, you know, winning the ball in the air against, you know, I mean, Kurt Zouma, we know how good Kurt Zouma is. And I thought he did well against him. He held the ball up well, as he does. And like you say, I think mentally, never mind mentally for us as fans, mentally for Dominic Calvert-Lewin, for him to know in his head now, listen, I'm recovered here. Physically, I'm recovered, and mentally. So he's not worrying about overexerting himself. We said it on previous podcasts in recent weeks, the manager deserves immense credit for basically nursing Dominic Calvert-Lewin back to health, because he's gone about things the right way. And obviously on the BBC podcast, nothing will be the same. A lot of obviously discussions around that with the manager, and he says, you know, he had to get him back, he had to get him right, and Calvert-Lewin thanked him for that. And quite often in press conferences, you think back, and it was getting boring for the manager. I think every single week people saying, how far is Dominic Calvert-Lewin away from getting fit? You know, when's he going to be back? Just because Everton were in such a state, and because we thought relegation was almost inevitable, we were looking for a hero. And the manager was probably getting bored of it. And he knew in his head, he's not coming back until he's ready physically, he's ready mentally. And he even alluded to the fact that there was a bit of a joke made around the whole buying the right mattress, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, if you think back to a few months ago, last season, to making sure that he was doing everything. And Sean Dyche went, you know, a little bit tongue-in-cheek. He said, but we were looking at everything. You know, we were trying to think out of the box. It's not just about what you do at Finch Farm, training-wise, you know. It's what you do at home. You know, are you driving the right car? You know, because said he's so finely tuned as a footballer, as an athlete, that little things sometimes can really help. And today was just a, you know, evidence of that, how he has recovered, and how grateful we are as fans to see him back. And, you know, we know he's a threat, and centre-halves know he's a threat. You know, when you've got an Everton side with Dominic Calvert-Lewin in compared to Everton side with all due respect, Neil Mopay, it's night and day. And, you know, centre-halves know to be in the game when Dominic Calvert-Lewin is starting, when he's playing. And great to see, great finish. You know, another great performance from him. And, like, you know, 88 minutes or so before Yusuf Chimiti came on to see the game out. But that, on that Decore chance, Pete, what was your thoughts on that? Because at the time, I'm thinking to myself, you know, take another touch maybe. I mean, he catches it brilliantly, by the way, and it's got to be said, it's a fantastic save. It's a great save by the West Ham keeper, Areola. But do you think that he would have had time to take a touch, or do you think he's done the right thing?
So easy to say on a television replay, isn't it, when you're not in a game real time. I think he did the right thing by just leathering it. I think the way it fell for him, you know, he's obviously known just on gut instinct that he can put his foot through it and he can connect well. And I thought it was a great strike. I think it's just a simple case of it was a really brilliant save from the West Ham keeper. And look, if it's a little bit a bit more either side of the keeper, it's in, isn't it? And I think even if you look at the connection the keeper's got on it, he's got such a good hand. Like the amount of distance after the keeper connects with it, it's travel to then get round the post. I think a lot of other keepers would have got a hand on that and it would have ended up in the net. You know, if he takes a touch, you know, the pace of the game's so quick, he'd have defenders on his shoulder, and then, you know, is he going to get a good quality shot away? It's so easy to say, isn't it, that, you know, he had time to take a touch, or he could have taken a touch. It was the right shot for me, and it was a really good connection. But it's another one of those cases, isn't it, that it's a game where we arguably could have done more with the chances that we had.
Yeah, we look back on that, don't we? And at the time, if we go 2-0 up, you'd think it's game over, wouldn't you, Phil? You could go into the last sort of 20 minutes or so thinking, you know, and I couldn't have seen a way back for West Ham at all at 2-0, but that's when you sort of start questioning what could he have done different. But I look back on it after the game and I just think if he takes a touch there, the defender's probably going to get it because he hasn't got the pace. I don't think to sort of get to the ball before the defenders, but it's still a big, big chance and one, Phil, which would have made it that little bit more comfortable for us all for those final 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, well, to be fair, apart from the obviously the Bournemouth game last year, we don't really see Decore shoot from distance anyway. He seems to drive with the ball, which is why I was quite surprised when I watched it. But I agree with Pete. I think it was the way it's set up for him. It's like bounces, he connects it. I think although it was a great save, I think the keeper wasn't sure whether he was going to drive or shoot, but he got down low. I just feel if he does take a touch, he has to take a touch to his left because there's an oncoming defender on his right shoulder, which obviously, you know, put him off balance, and I don't think he'd have to cut back inside. So I do think he snatched at it quite early, but I think it was the right thing to do, to be fair.
Yeah, I think, as I say, I think it's always easy when you look at replays and you look back on things or you make, even when you make a snap judgment, but he's probably got it right there. And on another day, it goes in. It's a decent save. And, you know, he's caught it really, really well. Probably as well as he caught the goal for the Bournemouth game, to be honest with you, at the end of last season. But Unlucky not to go further ahead there, and it would have been deserved for me. You know, we caused them a few problems. I had a fair few chances. You know, certainly the Harrison chance in the first half was the best chance. He probably could have done better with the second chance in the first half as well. I know Dom hit the bar second half. I think it was offside. The flag eventually went up, but Calvert-Lewin was playing on the shoulder all the time, wasn't he? And he was timing those runs pretty well. I know they were borderline, but he was timing them well, and that was causing problems for the defenders in the centre half because they weren't sure when to step out because Dom's timing was brilliant. And I think all in all, you know, if we look at the West Ham chances even in the second half, I thought we kept them pretty quiet. I know Pickford made a couple of saves. One was offside, wasn't it? But the one late on where he's parried away, it was pretty comfortable, to be fair. And Pickford's going to be happy there, isn't he? Isn't he, Pete? You know, it's a clean sheet. It's a second clean sheet now in two games, which is, you know, as a goalkeeper, he's going to be delighted. The defence should be delighted by it. You know, we spoke about Brantwaite being terrific. Mikhailenko, Pete, you know, the last two games against Salah, I thought he was terrific. And I know Salah scored two goals, but it certainly wasn't a reflection on Mikhailenko's performance. And I thought he carried through that form from the Merseyside derby into this game today. I thought his timing of his tackles was really good. We know he's never going to bomb forward, you know, with the best will in the world. I know he pulled a couple of crosses in, but that's just not his game. But Mikhailenko, I think, in the last few weeks or so, has really come alive, and probably maybe silenced a few doubters in the process.
Definitely, yeah, you're right to highlight him. And you look, like I've always said, I think Mikhailenko's a good defender. I think, you know, people forget what a young player he is, and that he's not Luka Dean in terms of going forward. I think it's been so unhelpful for him, I think, really, to have those shoes to fill, because we were so used to seeing Dean's attacking output and Dean's crossing. I think people then have expected something very similar from Mikhailenko, which is unfair because he's a different type of player and you're a very, very young player. But defensively, I've always thought that he's excellent. You know, look at the way that he's handled players like Salah. I know we lost to Arsenal, but he was brilliant against Saka. He was great against Saka when he played for Ukraine against England. So, you know, he's clearly a hard-working, organised, accomplished defensive player. I think we maybe just need to be a bit more realistic about, you know, how young he is, and that he's a player in development in terms of his game going forward and his attacking play. And it might be that, you know, with the way that we play now, you don't see that from Mikhailenko as a player. But I thought the back four and Jordan Pickford in particular were absolutely outstanding. I know there was he made a brilliant save from a chance that was eventually offside, where he kind of saved it at point blank. But I thought he was really accomplished. And there was a moment in the game, I think after the Kudus incident, the commentary highlighted on Sky, where maybe he was at risk of losing his cool a little bit. I think he maybe a bit hastily tried to play a quick kick after picking up the ball, and I don't know whether Sean Dyche should kind of shouted something at him to slow down or calm it down a bit, and you could see him gesticulating. But I thought he did well to manage himself after that, because I think maybe two or three years ago it could have been one of those games where Pickford goes on to make a mistake that then gets really kind of highlighted and everybody focuses on it and blows it up out of proportion. So I think we often say on this podcast, you know, when Pickford has a quieter game and does everything well, you know, gets a clean sheet, it's really important to highlight that as well, because I thought he was really excellent today.
Yeah, we know, don't we, that Jordan Pickford can be an emotional beast, can't he? And we've seen him over the years. We know, obviously, he brought in a sports therapist, and, you know, sat down with them and spent quite a bit of time under Carlo Ancelotti when Carlo brought in Olsen, didn't he, for quite a few games. And it sort of really settled him down, and we know how important Jordan Pickford is for us. And like I say, one of his quieter games, and what he had to do, he did well. You know, like you mentioned that save that was obviously eventually offside, but it's a great save, of course. And he's so important to us, and we know, you know, one of the key reasons why we survived in the last two seasons for me is down to the level of performance from Jordan Pickford. But Phil, before we finish off, obviously discussing the West Ham game, just on Vitaly Mykolenko, have you been impressed by him in the last you know, 2 or 3 weeks or so? Is he somebody now who maybe we're starting to see, you know, taking a bit of time, but now properly adapting to the English game?
Massively, mate. Again, I think what you see is what you get with Mykolenko, like we've discussed. He's not going to bomb on. He's a 7, 8 out of 10 every week. In fairness, like you said, we, you know, Salah got 2 goals, but he did have a great game with him. I think what I've noticed as well, and I'd like to see now, is that is the back four that stays the back four. Like, I think they're all confident in each other. Like, Mykolenko, again, not many people get past him. And if they do get past him, he does stop the cross, whether that goes off for a corner or whatever. And again, they got Branthwaite. Again, the balance there, left-footed centre-half, left back with left foot rather than playing Young there or whoever. Coleman from years gone by has played there. But no, I think the players, I reckon his nickname probably in him is Mr. Consistent, but in the training ground, because I just think like he doesn't try things he can't do. You'll head it, you'll kick it, you'll play it, you'll keep it short. If he has to go long, you'll go long. And I think, you know, to say Saka and Salah are probably the two best wide men in the league, and he's had, you know, the last 2 or 3 games against them each, you know, whether it's international or domestic, he's been outstanding. And I think a lot of people like playing with him, whether that's a McNeil in front of him or a Branthwaite alongside him. I think they like to play with him because, like you said, he's steady Eddie, isn't he? He's a 7, 8 out of 10 every week. There's not many games in recent games, maybe in his last 20, 30 games, where you think, oh, he had a nightmare there personally. I think if he has a nightmare, the whole team has a nightmare. It's not just him in particular. I think he's been an unsung hero, let's say, I'd class him as.
I think you're right, and I think that left-hand side of defence now, we include Branthwaite and Mykolenko, which, you know, we know Branthwaite has come and done really well, but it starts to bring a real solidity to the team, and with McNeil in front, I mean, Sean Dyche must be delighted because we know he likes, you know, defensively is the first thing that he looks at. You know, we've got to be resilient, we've got to be effective and efficient defensively, and that's what that left-hand side, you know, is becoming. And looking at obviously the other side now, we said last week while Patterson now taking his chance, I thought he played well today. Started a little bit ropey, got beaten a couple of times, but I thought he grew into the game, and he needs games, you know, like Mykolenko needed games to obviously cement his place. So does Patterson, and there's no reason why for me now he should be getting taken out. Obviously Seamus Coleman, he's close, he's very, very close. We may see him on Wednesday possibly, but I think Nathan Patterson deserves his run there. And we're starting to get, you know, when you can have the same group of players playing week in, week out, whether it be defensively, in midfield, you know, in attacking areas, I think it really helps the side, of, you know, on the whole to gel together.
I was just to say a couple of years ago, Mike, I said, with Pickford, I said he didn't know who was centre-half partners, whether it was Michael Keane 1 week, Holgate, Godfrey, whoever it was, Tarkowski. I think as well, you know, in front of him, you've got, like, I think he knows now that, you know, McNeil plays on the left, you know, James Garner, you know, is a shoe-in. You've got Jack Harrison on the right, where you see, like, Garner Gay, he's finding it hard to get back in. You're seeing Dan Juma finding it hard to get in the team. Where last, you know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, it's been the same since Villa away, maybe, in the Cup. It's been the same kind of starting team, or, you know, we had the home game after that, and then where Jack Harrison scored that great goal, Bournemouth. And even in the derby, it was the same kind of team where it's not been tinkered around, where quite potentially that could happen Wednesday night.
You're right, and it's a perfect segue into Wednesday night and whether we are going to make changes, because obviously the Carabao Cup is our next game at home against Burnley. And we're going to discuss that after this short break. Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast as we look ahead to the visit of Burnley to Goodison Park, Carabao Cup action. And it's going to be a game now which we can go into quite relaxed. You know, the angst of the Premier League, you know, we've won 2 out of the last 3. We've won 4 out of the last 6 in all competitions, which is a fantastic return, by the way. And should have really been better, if we're being honest, with that Luton game, a real blip on out of those last 6 games. But the Burnley game, in my mind, after the full-time whistle today, I just felt, you know, we can go there now and, It's a free hit for everybody. We should be relaxed. But I do think, Pete, we are going to see not loads of changes because the manager does take this competition seriously. You know, Jordan Pickford always seems to start in it, which is always, I think, a key sign of the mind, yeah, wants to do something in this competition. You know, we've seen, you know, over the years how many times has the goalkeeper being changed, but I fully expect Jordan Pickford to start. But there are going to be questions elsewhere. You know, when we look at managing players and, you know, managing the performance and the how much strain they're putting on the body, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, probably one example. You know, we've got a Jessica Gay, like Phil mentioned before the break, who's obviously eager to probably come back in. Seamus Coleman, Dan Juma, does Bessewater Mitty come in, which is another question. There's a few players there who are going to be eager to get a go. But, you know, if they do get a go, Pete, it's important that they come in and take the chance because, like we've said, this side is now fairly settled, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah, and I think you're right. I think potentially we might see either an unchanged back four or potentially just a single change, maybe a right back for the game. Of course, it's important to try and stay in the competition and to have a little bit of a cup run and be competitive. But I also think it's really important to keep your winning momentum. And for me, that's probably something that's going to be firmly in Sean Dyche's mind. I would like to see changes further up the pitch. I think it's an opportunity for Beto and Chimiti to prove themselves and grow their confidence a little bit. Dan Juma as well. I think what will be interesting, though, you know, not to get too tactical, but I guess it's been really highlighted, hasn't it, how effective the press has been against Burnley. And I think whoever does come in, if changes are made, like you said, they're going to have to really, really be up for it. They're going to have to be organised. They're going to have to work because probably the success of our approach to the game is going to depend so much on work rate and fitness and consistency and organisation. And that's always the risk, isn't it, when you change an established system or what we're now starting to see in a crystallised kind of team and setup. When you bring new people in, are they going to have the same kind of work rate and commitment and organisation and belief as the person that they've replaced? And that's always the gamble around how many changes you make for a game like this.
You'd like to think, wouldn't you, that you know, the players you have been watching on from the sideline, obviously the manager didn't really use a substitute bench today against West Ham, but those players must be looking and thinking, you know, I'm dying to get on there and show what I'm worth. And, you know, players who were starting not too long ago, you know, Dan Juma, we had a conversation, Phil, we mentioned it last week when we went for some food about, you know, Dan Juma about being the new Kevin Morales. And then ever since that time, he hasn't got a look in, has he? And it's funny how football works and how things can change so quickly. But I'm sure, you know, I think him in particular, he's going to be really keen to show the mind, yeah, you know, what he's missing by not playing him, isn't he?
Yeah, for me, I would, you know, like Pete said, the key word is momentum. You want to win football matches. You know, when we got the draw, Aston Villa away, we always thought, oh, typical out first round. And then, you know, we got that win and we built on it from the Bournemouth game. I think, personally, I would keep the defence as it is. You know, you build on this clean sheet, get a good understanding as the back four. But like you said, there'll be lads there, you know, because he obviously doesn't change much, itching to get in that starting 11. And it seems to be like whoever comes in now knows exactly the script. You know, I personally think he might make three, possibly four changes, just personally, like to give everyone an opportunity to the forward players, I mean, like you might see a Garner Gay come in, you might see a Beto come in for Calvert-Lewin, you might see maybe either one of the wingers having a little rest and Dan Juma come in, maybe Chimiti, I don't know, maybe that's why he didn't bring any on. He thought a bit similar to Leicester last year. These lads can do, you know, some looked like they were flagging a bit, but he kept on going because the concentration levels were so high. But if I was Dyche, I would like to think he'd keep that same back four and get a good understanding, because going forward, you think that should be the back four. Now, obviously, Coleman's had a long-term injury, and I don't know if Ashley Young comes back in. I don't know. In future weeks, but I'll try and make that as your back four. I think that's our strongest back four. And then going forward, I think it's a game where, what will Burnley, like Pete might say, you know, they might use it as a game where they get their first win as a springboard to then push them on the Premier League, or do they think, no, we've got more important things to do? You know, we'll play some of the reserve lads and, you know, rest for the league. It's hard to tell, really, but I think you know, West Ham away is a difficult place to go, and you need to, like Pete said, you need to keep that momentum going, and then that takes you on to the next game against Brighton at home, who don't seem to be, you know, flying at the moment. So I'll be as strong as you can, but I do think he's got these lads in the wings, like your Dan Juma's, your Garner's, your Beto's, itching to get involved.
Which is exactly the situation that we've strived for, haven't we, for quite a while now. You know, we know the struggles we had at the back end of last season, where we were just fitting players in just to play a position that was not so much alien to them, but it certainly wasn't the preferred position. Whereas we look at now and we think, well, there's a fair few players there that can slot in and come in and look to take a chance. There's competition for places, which, you know, who would have thought that Garner Gay wouldn't be on the team week in, week out. You know, you just wouldn't have thought. Obviously, got that unfortunate injury before the Bournemouth game, which meant that Amadou Onana got the nod in that game. And that you look at him and James Garner now, and you just think, well, I wouldn't take either of those out for Garner Gay. And I love Garner Gay. You know, over the years for us, before he did move to PSG, he was terrific. I think he's come back and he's done well. We know what he's all about. But, you know, him especially, you know, what a player to have on the bench in terms of the quality that he brings to the side.
Like you said there, mate, you absolutely nailed it. And I think years gone by, I think we could all name the team on Saturday. I think this year, the squad's so flexible, and, you know, you make one mistake or you have a slight injury and there's someone there to take your position and will keep that position for 3, 4, 5 games. And I think that's where Dyche has got it right this year. Like, you know, waves of attack, we're not relying on one person as a striker. We're at years gone by that, you know, players behind Calvert-Lewin look like they're going to score or at least get chances. With McNeil's, your Harrison's, your Decore's, but you've still got that screen of an Onana, a Garner Gay, a James Garner. But like you said, I thought James Garner might be a bit too weak to play as a midfielder, essentially, but he's making that position his own. And like you said, Mike, I've loved Garner Gay. He's been one of my favourite players, but age catches up with us all. But yeah, just one mishap. And the level of competition and training must be really good. And I think he's got rid of the bad eggs or the players who are itching for a move. And they all seem to be happy and wanting to be here.
And it's always obviously easier to feel that way when you're winning games of football. And like you say, when you've got momentum, the positive mood around the sailing ground at the moment must be night and day compared to what the players were going through at the back end of last season. And, you know, that does build resilience in a side. And the fact that they stuck together the last two seasons of those players have been around for, and, you know, they've gone through that. And hopefully now we're starting to see ourselves come off the other side. Obviously, depends on this independent commission that we're going through. But, you know, it's hopefully the future is that little bit brighter. But, you know, we're facing a Burnley side, Peter, who were really struggling. You know, a side that when they came up to the Premier League, they won the Championship at an absolute canter, didn't they? And they were playing this different brand of football. You know, they were used to the Sean Dyche way of playing, you know, being resilient. Not great on the eye sometimes, but, you know, they certainly put above their weight for many, many years in the Premier League under Sean Dyche. But they brought in Vincent Kompany in the Championship, totally different side how they play. But it looks like they brought that style of football, or they tried to bring that style of football to the Premier League, and it's been to the detriment based on what we've seen so far.
Yeah, massively. I don't know if either of you or any listeners have watched the episode of The Overlap with Craig Bellamy, but it's really interesting because he talks a lot about the philosophy that him and Vincent Kompany have tried to kind of instill, and he's said very openly like they're absolutely not going to move away from that philosophy at any point this season, which is really interesting that, you know, they've kind of set out the stall that they are going to try and make this possession-based football game work in the league, despite the results they've had. So I think there's something really important about this game that is just about, like Phil said, let's not give them any cause for momentum or celebration or hope. You know, I think it, you know, although it's not for Premier League points, it's an opportunity to kind of kick them while they're down and put a bit of a sickener in on them. So I think, you know, it's important that we approach the game in the right way. And like I was saying before, I think that organisation and that press is going to be so important to the success of the game, because that seems to be where Burnley have really, really struggled. It's without the ball. and leaving so much space, which you just you can't do against Premier League sides. So I hope we see a version of Everton that's ruthless and maybe not the kind of version of Everton we were seeing in the first kind of two or three games of the season, where we weren't quite taking the chances that we, you know, we were making when we were on top.
I think you're right, and I think that, you know, Burnley is the kind of game, whether it be in the league or in the cup, where they're going such a, you know, through such a poor run of form. They haven't adapted particularly well to the Premier League, and you know, a win for them gives them a little bit of hope and momentum that they can take into the league, like you said earlier on. So we want to avoid that, because they're one of the sides that, whether we like it or not, we're probably going to be fighting with over the quite a large portion of this season. So if we can inflict another defeat on them, as much as they may not see it as a massive game for them, or massively important, or put too much on it, I think it's important for us to, as like you say, one of the sides that we are probably going to be fighting with, let's give them a little bit of a defeat, and that hopefully by a few goals. But it's dangerous, Phil, isn't it, from a Burnley perspective? Like Pete was saying there, you know, they don't want to change the philosophy. You can't afford to be like that. You can't afford to be that stubborn when you come in to the Premier League, can you? You can look great in the Championship and play a particular brand of football, but if you don't adapt in the Premier League, then you're almost writing, you're a bit too, aren't you? And you're almost looking a relegation right in the face.
Yeah, it's funny enough, Pete, I was listening to that. It was like the overlap with Craig Bellamy last night, actually, and he was saying, Gary Neville was asking the questions, and he said, so you're not going to buy a 6'5" forward in January? And he just said, no. He said, because Forrest had to change, didn't he? You know, they signed a lot of players, and they had to end up going long ball and make their home ground the fortress. And Bellamy was saying they're not bothered or that worried about being on the ball because they're that confident. They were more bothered about what they do off the ball, and the gaps are too big. That's what he was kind of leaning towards. So I think it'd be very stubborn, and especially for Vincent Kompany. He knows the league, and Bellamy does, and I know he's been to Anderlecht and things like that. But I'd be, it's quite naive if that's what they're going to do, because they'll just get swallowed up. They will just get swallowed up by everyone, and even the teams down there, you know, near the bottom. I'll be very surprised if he doesn't change his approach.
Yeah, so would I. I think sometimes, you know, these sound bites are great, aren't they? But these are the kind of things that, you know, sometimes you put out as a bit of a red herring. But if they do stick to that, then for me, then yeah, they're going to stay relegation in the face. They just can't afford to do that, because, like we saw with Bournemouth at Goodison Park a few weeks ago, the manager wants them to play a particular way, and they were persistent with this playing out from the back. But unless you've got the quality of player to do that, especially when you're at the bottom end of the table, it's just not going to work, is it? So it does take time. You can always go back to your philosophy and your brand of football and still be obviously trying to influence things in that way and get the players used to it. But you've still got to be, as a manager, you've still got to show signs that you will adapt to the situation, and you're not going to sit there and just be stubborn just because that's how you believe football should be played.
Well, we've had it with us, didn't we? Lampard, he tried to play out from the back, and he openly said, I need to change, and it wasn't his kind of style, but he had to do it for the good of keeping the club up and trying to grind out results. And in the end, we you know, don't like going on about them seasons, but we managed to stay up. And obviously, like I mentioned before, Forest did exactly the same, and obviously their home record is probably one of the best outside the top four, so it'd be very naive if he did stick to that, because I think he's staring relegation in the face.
He is. And we'll see, obviously, how that plays out, because, honestly, as I say, they're going to be in and around those positions, as we will probably be. So we'll keep a close eye on that. But hopefully they do try and play open, expansive football and stick to the way that they want to play. And that would be to our benefit on Wednesday night. But let's finish off, if we can, with a round of predictions. Phil, what do you think Wednesday under the lights at Goodison Park?
I'm going to go with, and the reason being, I think it'll be a very special, poignant evening. I think everyone's itching to get to Goodison Park, actually. I think it's one of the most special places to be under the lights. But I just think it's got something, you know, there'll be a big ceremony at the start with Kem Wright. And I actually think the atmosphere will be very good, actually. I think you might hear a bit of a, you know, a roar in the stadium. a bit like when we played them in Townsend, scored that screamer. I think there'll be something on it. Obviously, going through to the next round of the Cup. And I do think he'll make changes, and I think it'll benefit us. I think it'll be 3-1 Everton. I think we'll get at them first 20 minutes, score a goal, and then they'll have to come out on us and they leave gaps at the back. 3-1.
A bold prediction. It's amazing what a couple of wins can do for you, isn't it, in terms of your optimism. Pete, do you share the same kind of optimism?
I do. You've taken my prediction off me. I was going to say 3-1 as well, because I think Burnley will score. I think with it being a cup tie, and I think with the way they play on the ball, but I just think, particularly playing them at Goodison, tight pitch, I think we'll get at them, we'll press them, and I think we're going to get chances, and let's hope we make the most of them. So yeah, 3-1 Blues.
I'm going to go for a 2-0 Everton. I do think we'll get through, and through to a quarter final, you know, anything can happen when you get through to the latter stages of any cup competition. So I do see us getting through it. I think we mentioned momentum being key. We're in decent form. The confidence seems to be flowing through the side, you know, whether it be defensively or the belief that we can score goals. You know, how long have we got over 7 years being unconvinced by the fact that we can go out and score goals? There certainly seems to be a bit more resilience in this side. So I'm going to say 2-0. And we'll sail through to the quarterfinals. And what you say, Phil, will be a quite a poignant affair at Goodison Park on Wednesday. You know, it's sold out. Unsurprising, it's sold out. You know, expect nothing less than Everton fans. But yeah, hopefully we do get ourselves through. And then obviously Brighton comes to Goodison Park on Saturday. So like you were saying, not in the best of form, Brighton. Drew against Fulham today, 1-1 at home, which is a bit of a surprise. So certainly looking ahead to that game, you know, let's keep the momentum going. But that's us for today. Great to always record after a win, of course, and an away win at that. So Everton eventually now looking like we're starting to climb the table a little bit, pulling away from that bottom three, which is always nice. So we will catch you ourselves next week to look back on the. Next weekend, look back on the Brighton game and look back on the Burnley game in midweek. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues. Three Opinions. One Everton Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.